Bibles for our New Testament reading to Acts chapter 25. Acts 25, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. Now, when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him, and desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying in wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them, therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. And when he had tarried there among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended in anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, There is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, It is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die before that he which is accused, to have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat, and commanded the man to be brought forth. Against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved to the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear him. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing, with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, all men which are here present with us, ye see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and specially before thee, O King Agrippa, that, after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. So we get to peek behind the scene a little bit and take a look at some of the inner workings of the Roman court. It's a very interesting passage in that sense, isn't it? That we see that there are things that are going on in this Roman court that are what we would say, according to the light of nature, that these Romans have a decent understanding of what justice ought to look like. Notice that, and we'll reiterate this once again, civil magistracy is a natural institution and governed by that light of nature that God has put upon the heart of every man. Although it is there, yes, it is marred, and yes, governments can be perverted and judgment can be perverted and often is. But notice also that the truth is written there. This is an important point that we must maintain. And so our civil magistrates do not have to be Christians in order for their judgments to be authoritative. It's a natural office. And this is very clear in this passage, isn't it? Paul will submit himself rather to Caesar in a civil judgment than to the Jews. Now think about who Paul is as a Pharisee. He grew up underneath the understanding of the Old Testament, which had, even in the Old Testament, a set of civil and ecclesiastical courts that operated in a coordinate fashion, but were separate one from another. Paul will appeal to that civil magistracy here with regard to that natural thing pertaining to his life, whether or not he can be put to death for committing a crime as a murderer or other such capital punishment. He's going to commit himself to the judgment of Caesar. It is an amazing thing that Paul would choose Caesar over his own countrymen, but we know that his own countrymen are perverse and want to put him to death. They have accused him of things, and they have said the only punishment for this, Felix before him and now Festus, is death. Paul will appeal to Caesar and that natural understanding of things. We believe that Paul was eventually released, but also he had been told by the Lord that he was going to travel to Rome and that he was going to preach before kings there. And so the apostle is also pursuing that secret prophetic influence that has come upon him through his understanding as an apostle and the Spirit of God having told him, or Christ himself, having told him in a vision that he must preach also at Rome. So he's appealed to Caesar. But notice that in this appeal to Caesar, although it will facilitate that ministry, it is still perfectly in order with what ought to be done. And this is something that we ought to remember, right? That most often, there may be some extraordinary circumstances, but most often, when it is the Lord directing our steps, it will be in an orderly and lawful way. It will not be in the way of rebellion. Okay, so with that as an introduction, let's take a look at a couple of things. This is another milestone in Paul's imprisonment. Felix has left the stage and now Festus has come on the stage. We start with Festus in Jerusalem and Paul still in Caesarea. Remember that Caesarea is the port town on the Mediterranean Sea that was the last stop if you were coming in from the Mediterranean to get to Jerusalem. It was just a short trip from Caesarea to Jerusalem. And so Festus, he has come into this governorship, and so he's going to visit his environs. And he goes to Jerusalem to visit the Jews that are there. Well, they are single-minded. They have one thing that they want from him, and that is, let's bring Paul down here so he can be tried before us here. Remember that Jerusalem would not have been the place of the judgment seat. That would be in Caesarea. That's where the governor of the Roman nation in that area had his judgment. So the Jews are asking for quite a favor, that he would judge Paul there in Jerusalem, in their home city, if you will, rather than at the place of judgment where it normally would be, in Caesarea. Well, this is again handled under the providence of God, who would indeed save Paul's life because the Jews were laying in wait to slay him. And that slaying of him would have been against the Roman law. In other words, some of them would have suffered for that had they overrun the Roman cohort that was causing Paul to travel to Jerusalem. And had they killed Paul, you know, they would have killed a prisoner in custody of the Roman cohort, and that would have been a punishable offense. So the religious leaders of the Jews are fixing to break the law, in other words. They're planning murder. Okay, well, that is obviously evil. It is wicked, but the Lord protected his servant. And so Festus said, no, we belong in Caesarea if we're going to do this judgment. I'll stay with you for 10 days and then we'll travel and you can travel with me and off we will go. And so when they get to Caesarea, without much delay, Festus sits on the judgment seat and has the hearing, and the Jews come in and they have grievous accusations and they're asking for his head. And Festus then has Paul speak for himself to face his accusers. And what happens? He's very credible, just like he was in the last chapter. He's very credible, very straightforward, very earnest, very candid. And so with all of that, Festus, you know, not being an amateur at judging, says, well, this is all very credible. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this. Paul has appealed to Caesar. I'd like to send him to Caesar, but I don't know what charges to write. I can't send him to Caesar with, you know, there's been some superstitious things going on here with the Jews and they want to kill him. That'll laugh me off the stage, if you will. So, again, in God's providence, we have Agrippa, King Agrippa. Now, who is Agrippa? Well, he's a part of the Hasmoneans. He's, in fact, his full title is Herod Agrippa. Okay, so he is of the house of Herod, of the Hasmoneans, who were usurpers to the throne and not the descendants of the Davidic throne, not Judahites at all. But he had that position, and so he and Festus chat, right? Again, Festus is meeting a vassal king as a part of his good judgment over the nation to get to know those other leaders that would be under him in his authority. And so he asks Agrippa if he will come and hear Paul. And actually, that comes up from Agrippa. And so Festus says, yes, I would like you to hear it because you're more expert in these matters of the Jews than I am. And perhaps you can help me formulate my charges against him when I send him up to Caesar, because he has appealed to Caesar. Notice that Paul did appeal to Caesar because he understood what it meant to keep, as we said earlier, that separateness between the church and the state with regard to civil matters and ecclesiastical matters. Paul says something very interesting here, doesn't he? He says, for if I be an offender, verse 11, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. So there are a couple of things there. First of all, if you know anyone in, say, law enforcement or the legal sphere, you know, if there's any defense attorneys out there that you know, ask them how often you come across someone that's accused of being an offender who says, if I've done anything wrong, I would like to suffer the full punishment of that wrongdoing that I've done. Normally, that's not what's going on. Normally, it's, okay, you're right, I did wrong. Can we just put this behind us? Can I just be released? I'll never do it again, I promise. What does Paul understand here? Children, I'd like you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. Paul understands that if we've done something wrong, the punishments that come to us are helpful to us. That the worst thing we could ever hope for is to do something wrong and get away with it. That will train us to do more evil rather than less. And that works for children, and it works for adults, and it works for everybody in between or beyond. So Paul says, if I have done anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. We've talked about this principle before, the great salutary nature of consequences and what the Lord brings upon us. Normally, the way we have put it is with King Saul. The Lord told King Saul, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you. What Saul should have thought was, the Lord is taking away the kingdom from me. This will be good for me. But what did he do instead? He clutched it even the more tightly and became a monster in his own nation rather than a godly king. When the Lord would deprive us of something, when the Lord would chastise us for something, in Hebrews 12 we learn that chastisement is good for us. It helps us to, quote, partake of God's holiness. It yields the peaceable fruits of righteousness to them that are exercised thereby. And then, remember that in pressing us toward holiness, that holiness, it says in that same passage, without which no man shall see the Lord. So when the Lord deprives us, even what Paul would say here, of our lives, if we have committed a capital crime, this is salutary for us. It works for our salvation if we handle it rightly. If we say with Cain, oh, my punishment is greater than I can bear. If we say with many, oh, these punishments are not fair. If we kick and grind and buck under the punishments that the Lord would press to us, we will not profit from them. And they will be crushing to us rather than saving to us. Children, I hope you listen to that. When your parents punish you, that is the hand of God upon you to teach you, to train you, to help you to turn away from iniquity. And whenever you get by with something, don't go snickering off to the out of doors. There's a really funny story about James Henley Thornwell, who, when his mother would have punished him on several occasions because he was 12 or 11 years of age, he just ran out into the forest. And he spent the night in the forest. And just before daylight, he came in and got in his bed, and thinking that the punishment has passed him by. And he was awakened more often than once by his mother's switch. And those sheets were a poor shield against the blows of his mother. Now, in our day, that would be called child abuse. Let me tell you very clearly, child abuse is refusal to punish. That's what child abuse is. In fact, the Bible says, if you spare the rod, you hate your child. Let's remember that. Paul understands that principle. If I have done something worthy of death, I refuse not to die. I will give my neck to the sword, Paul says. Why? Because I desire the salutary means that God has provided for me. And shall we say it this way? There are things worse than dying. Dying without the Lord is worse, right? So let's remember that when we hear the Apostle Paul speak here. This is good in its application for us all. Okay, so over and again, we see the secret hand of God working here providentially, that Paul will wind up in Rome and preach to the entire household of Caesar, as we hear in Philippians chapter 1, because these guys are disposed to let him go. They find nothing, but Paul has appealed to Caesar so that he will be acquitted once and for all, but also so that he will have a place to stand to preach the gospel in Rome. All right, thus ends the reading of Acts chapter 25.